Let's call this meeting of the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:30 p.m. on Friday, March 20th, 2026. Before we begin, I want to thank Juliana Singh, the Senate Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Doug Bridges from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room, please silence your cell phones. Today present, we have Senator Tilton, Senator Stevens, Senator Tobin, my vice chair, Senator Keel, and myself, Senator Klayman. We have a quorum to conduct business. The first item on our agenda today is Senate Bill 237, Data Sharing Social Security, sponsored by the Senate State Affairs Committee by request. This is the second hearing of the bill in the Senate Judiciary Committee. We received one amendment before the previously set amendment deadline that has been incorporated into a committee substitute. I would like to look to the will of the committee to adopt work version N as our working document. Senator Keel, may I have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Senate Judiciary Committee adopt CS for Senate Bill 237 Judiciary, Work Draft 34LS1428/N, as in Nanwalek, as our working document.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Here to explain the summary of changes is our Senate Judiciary Committee aide, Brianna Kakarik. If you would please put yourself on the record and begin your remarks.
Hello, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Brianna Kakarik, and I'm staff to Senator Klayman. In work draft version N of Senate Bill 237, the only change is found starting on page 2, lines 6 through 7. Subsection G on lines 6 and 7 was amended to read, the department shall, upon the request of a person or the person's designee, furnish information about the person. So, and this change was requested to tighten up the language on who requests the information.
Any questions or comments from members of the committee? Hearing and seeing that, I'm going to remove my objection. And SB 237 work draft version N is now adopted as our working document. It's my intention to look to the will of the committee and move Senate Bill 237. Any final questions or comments from either for the bill sponsor's office or comments from the bill sponsor's office? Senator Kawasaki is shaking his head.
Sure.
Senator Stevens.
I just do have one question, Senator Kawasaki. So this would allow us to apply online for a lost Social Security card, and I lost mine the last century sometime. So I'm thinking, oh, it'd be good to have one. But it says that I would not have a problem of losing my sensitive documents in the mail. How are they going to make sure that they have those documents? Does that go online? I guess maybe I make it not very clear. But do I have to show a picture of it, or how is that practically going to work?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, Jenna Calhoun, for the record, staff for Senator Kawasaki. It's going to be through the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators. They have different tools that the Social Security Administration can access and to verify the identity. So basically, you would put in the same information like your driver's license number. And again, I haven't applied for a lost Social Security card online. I need to do it as well. I'm looking forward to this. But they would basically then verify your identity through your driver's license and the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators as a yes, this is the person, or no, it's not the person. And then from that point in time, they would delete that information. That way, no info is being retained in either entity. So that's why they're going to say, oh, this is Senator Stevens. This is his driver's license number. And we are confirming that he is who he says he is through this tool set that they have. And that's why we feel the statute needs to be changed to make that process easier for all Alaskans.
I think it's a good idea. It just keeps you from losing those documents in the mail. So, good. Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, Senator Keel may have a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wish I could get my passport this way rather than sending those documents through the mail. With that, I move Senate Judiciary Committee report Senate Bill 237, work order, the Judiciary Committee substitute, work order 34LS1428/N, as in Nome, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Hearing no objection. Senate Bill 237 moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to fill in our paperwork. Back on record, the second and last item on our agenda is Senate Bill 249, Virtual Currency Kiosks, sponsored by Senator Tilton. This is the first hearing of the bill in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Here to present the bill is Senator Tilton and her staff, Heath Hilliard. Senator Tilton, please join us at the front. Mr. Hilliard, come forward and put yourselves on the record. You can begin your presentation. I will just note as you're getting settled, it is impressive. There's one special order a matter of weeks ago, and there's already a bill to go with it.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Keel, and members of the Judiciary Committee. For the record, my name is Senator Kathy Tilton from Senate District M, Palmer Butte, Lazy Mountain, Gateway, Kinnick, Fairview, and Sellers Bay. And with me today is my staff, Heath Hilliard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Heath Hilliard, staff to Senator Tilton.
So first, I want to say just say thank you for hearing this bill today. As many of you have heard the testimony that I gave on the House floor regarding an issue that happened to my mother. Just going back a little bit, just to bring you back up to speed with that, there was a phone call that came into her phone. Unfortunately, she didn't look at the phone number itself. She just, her hearing aides happened to answer the phone. So one of the things that we can do when we're looking at giving out information to folks as we get further along is that maybe not having your phone being automatically answered. And sometimes at this point in time, even your phone number can be duped and duplicated. So even looking at the phone number might not be a way to stop what happened here, but it is, I think a lot of people don't think about your hearing aids being an automatic phone answering system for yourself. So anyway, to proceed, there was a phone call and they had used AI that used my voice. So it sounded like myself talking to my mother and telling her that I had been in a car accident. There was a lot of detail about this car accident and that I had been arrested. And I think that this is a story that maybe every one of you at the table have heard some version of this. And then after going through this discussion with my mom, and there was lots of answers for everything. Well, I was arrested for a DUI, but my mother knows that I don't drink, so that would be very interesting. But the answer for that was, well, you had taken some cough syrup and that registered, although I didn't do that either. Obviously, it wasn't me. But so the next thing they did was put a lawyer on the phone, and here's where this bill comes into play. The lawyer had told the quote-unquote lawyer, had told my mom that what she needed to do was she needed to go to her bank, she needed to get an amount of cash, and then he directed her to take that cash to a specific place, which was at a gas station where there was a cryptocurrency kiosk. And he helped her in putting her cash that she had taken from her bank account into the cryptocurrency kiosk. Now, in the case of my mother, they did several small transactions. So it wasn't just one big $8,000 transaction. It was several small transactions. So this is a reason and the impetus for SB 249 that we're hearing today. First off, I want to just back up a little bit and say, as far as cryptocurrency and virtual currency, this bill is not about cryptocurrency or Bitcoin. It is really about the kiosk being available and what is happening in that world. So a lot of testimony you might hear might talk about cryptocurrency universe, which there are many ways in which cryptocurrency is traded or bought. But specifically, our focus is on the kiosks themselves. So I just wanted to put that out there, and that just what I want to address with the kiosks is that the rising amount of fraud that is being done through the, you know, it's crime under the color of law, and you're going to hear testimony, maybe not here, but today, but some invited testimony that will talk about how this fraud has been rising in Alaska. In 2023, they only had two folks that they had been investigated for having fraudulent things happen to them in the cryptocurrency kiosk. And by 2024, it was up to 83. I don't have 25 and 26 numbers, but I do know that in 2025, there was over $26 million worth of fraudulent transactions that happened against our seniors here in Alaska, a lot of it from countries outside of Alaska. So I just want to say that my story is about my mom, but this isn't about protecting my mom. I don't want anybody to think that I'm too attached and it's about feelings and emotions. It really is. I think that every one of you have probably had this happen to you where you received a text or you received a phone call or you received an email or you know somebody that has. And in a lot of cases, you maybe don't go through with it in the end because somewhere along the line way you realize that, wait, this can't be what it appears. But looking at elder fraud itself, that is who it is mainly are the victims of this kind of fraud because they have typically access to more cash and, you know, are not maybe as nimble using the virtual things of the world that we are using right now. So interestingly enough, the numbers are pretty sobering. In 2023, Alaskans age 60 or older reported over $8.7 million in losses to fraud, which has been increasing. And I already mentioned the $26 million. These figures come from the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center and state reports. But the one thing I would caution is that the number is probably a lot higher because when this happens, people are typically not going to go out and say, guess what I just did? You know, they normally have a little bit of it. They're a little bit ashamed or a little bit they're upset that they were, that this fraud was happened to them. And so I don't think as much is reported as what is actually happening out there. So today in front of you is SB 249, the virtual currency kiosk, which I am kind of calling the don't mess with grandma bill, kind of in a funny way. But it is also known the fraud fraud perpetrated upon elders. So what the bill does itself is it puts some guardrails on our cryptocurrency kiosks, which are basically unregulated at this point in time. It includes licensing and oversight. So it would require the kiosk operators to hold a mini transmission license and register each physical location. I believe at this, maybe Mr. Hilliard can help us with this, but I think how many cryptocurrency machines are there in Alaska at this time?
Again, for the record, Keith Hilliard, staff to Senator Tilton, through the chair, approximately, I believe it's nearly 60, but less than.
Right. And mainly located in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and a few in the Matsu. So this would require licensing and oversight. It would also require a mandatory fraud warning. And in some of the testimony that you will hear when we have invited testimony, you will hear that the city of Palmer has even gone as far as doing their own kind of signage regarding this. And that will come from the Palmer Police Department. It would add some transaction limits because at this point there are no transaction limits. A transaction limit would then cut the amount that somebody might be, my mom would put $8,000 into that machine. So if there was transaction limits per day, the bill started out with a $1,000 transaction limit. In the Labor and Commerce Committee did move that down to a $500 per day, $5,000 per month. It would add a fee transparency. Right now, the bill that initial bill was proposed at 3%. The Labor and Commerce Committee made that 2%. I think you'll hear from the owners of the kiosks that they can't do business at those percentages, and we can have a discussion about why and what that looks like. It would also add a right to a refund. You'll hear also, I believe, from cryptocurrency kiosk owners that they're happy to return the fees, but they only would return the fraudulent money that was taken from somebody if the state requires them to do that. And then lastly, some law enforcement cooperation. One of the things that I felt like in the case of my mother is that she had made a call to the Juneau Police Department, thus finding out that there was not an accident and that nothing had happened to me. Aside the fact it probably would have been on the paper right away, but then she was told to call her local police, which she did, and they, you know, they were polite and helpful, but they told her she needed to file a claim with the FBI, which she did, but that was all online, and to date she has not heard from anybody, and that's nothing against our law enforcement or the protections. It's just that there is not a lot of help out there for folks when this happens. So. Anyway, while Alaska embraces our technological innovation, we must ensure that these new financial tools are not weaponized by bad actors to defraud our citizens, particularly our seniors and our most vulnerable neighbors. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Questions from committee members? Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I really appreciate you bringing this up. It's a quite interesting issue. And, of course, we want to make sure that seniors aren't defrauded. But I guess my question is, why not just eliminate all of them? What good are they? Is there some good that comes of them? I mean, I know there's a high percentage that are misused. But is there a good reason to keep some kiosks under controls? What for?
Senator Kathy Tilton, through the chair, thank you, Senator Stevens. I think that's a conversation that's happening throughout this building right now in regard, since this situation has been brought forward. My staff, Mr. Hilliard, has been doing a paper on who is using these kiosks and what for what purposes, and maybe I can refer to him if he would like to answer that.
Mr. Hilliard.
Thank you again for the record, Heath Hilliard, staff to Senator Tilton, through the chair, Senator Stevens. There is definitely an audience for which there's legitimate use. You will hear operators at a later time during invited testimony talk about the underbanked or the unbanked, and there is definitely that audience. When looking at the demographic comparisons between the average kiosk user and a cryptocurrency investor, there are several market differences. One, the average cryptocurrency investor has a household income of in excess of $100,000, usually has a college degree, and tends to be white or Asian. With regard to the average cryptocurrency kiosk user, that person generally has an income of under $80,000, usually more tends to be either African American or Hispanic, with a family with a household income under $80,000, and they have no bank account. Usually, the most common reason for people to not have bank accounts is simply the lack of sufficient funds, and so they're definitely a distinct audience. And so there is, I guess, a respective value for certain portions of the Alaska population. However, that doesn't mean that these devices are not being used for nefarious purposes.
I will add to that. Thank you, if I might, Mr. Chairman, through
Senator
the
Tilton.
Chair. Senator Stevens, you will also hear testimony that will say that there is only 1% fraud in the cryptocurrency universe, but that is not just the cryptocurrency kiosk. You will hear testimony that there is up to 96% fraud in the crypto kiosk portion. So there is a cryptocurrency universe which is much broader than just the use of these kiosks, which most of them you'll also find are located in gas stations and maybe liquor stores. So, but
well, thank you, Stevens. That's pretty shocking. Only 4% is used for legitimate issues. Do I understand that correctly? And 96% for fraud?
Senator Stevens, to the chair. That is what we heard testimony from Alaska, let's see, AARP, to use their initials. AARP made testimony to that, and not that is what they found through a court case that happened in, I believe it was in Iowa. And Senator Stevens, through the chair, also there are many states are dealing with this at this point in time with different levels of sideboards or guardrails. There is also one state that has completely banned cryptocurrency kiosks, and there is another one that is considering a ban. Now, not banned, ban. excuse me. Now, our goal here is just to put some sideboards on it to make it safe for our people here in Alaska. But I will say that cryptocurrency kiosk owners also have cryptocurrency platforms online. So we need to be clear in the differences that we wouldn't be, if you did ban the kiosk, you're not banning the entire business. So.
Thank you. And well, I'll see. I'll make the remark and then I'll ask a question. Interestingly enough, I met with one of the folks that own some of the kiosks, and in your concern about why do we still have them, one of the questions that struck me is that the fees for these transactions are 20%. And when I hear the statistic, and I guess that's my, when I hear the statistic that the majority of people using the kiosks are people with income less than $80,000, and it's very few people that have income over $100,000 are using these kiosks, the notion that what I would think of sort of exorbitant fees to use a kiosk also doesn't, also troubles me. But Mr. Hilliard, I mean, any idea about why folks with lower income are turning to machines like these to do money or do their business transactions? Because it seems like that 20% seems really punitive for people who can afford it less than the people who aren't using them. Any thoughts on that?
Again, Heath Hilliard, staff to Senator Tilton, Mr. Chair. The research that I've been doing recently has indicated several things. One, there's a certain population that has a huge distrust of the banking institutions. So part of is that. Some of them are perhaps illegal aliens without proper identification to be able to get a bank account. Some don't have enough money to open and maintain a bank account. And others, it's a matter of convenience. So there is clearly a distinction. But again, between the kiosk user and the cryptocurrency investor, and apparently the convenience factor is significant enough to cause the kiosk users to not be as concerned about the high fees.
Wow. Okay. Yes, I was going to call you by the other T senator, and I was wrong. Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question on beginning on page 3, line 16 and 17, and then again on page 7, line 6. On page 3, line 16 and 17, it says, a virtual currency kiosk operator shall disclose in a clear, conspicuous, and easily readable manner in the chosen language of the user. And so the way that I interpret that is that there will be an ability to pick a language so that you can ensure that you have fluency in whatever language the directions are asking you to work through the transaction. However, then on page 7, line 6, it says for all communications between a virtual kiosk operator and the user, the virtual currency kiosk operator shall provide written notices in both English and Spanish. And so there just seems to be some inconsistencies in which languages might be available for the users. And I don't know if they're if I'm meeting it incorrectly or if there is something that I'm missing in that dynamic.
Again, for the record, Heath Hilliard, staff to Senator Tilton. Through the chair, Senator Tobin. I can't speak to that specifically. I think it's a function of drafting. As we've mentioned in the previous committee, nothing in this bill was expressly included or excluded on our direction. This bill is as it stands, even amended, this bill is really a product of bullet points that were given to us by AARP that we had translated. So I can't give you a specific answer. That would be probably a question for the drafter.
Follow-up?
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. And I can definitely help in terms of just making sure there's consistency between what language information is being shared. I do think it's really important, especially when looking at the fiscal note, it says there's 76 of these kiosks across Alaska. I can assume they're in some places where folks may speak Ukrainian or they may speak Spanish, and we want to ensure that they're able to have the disclosures and information in a language that they understand.
Thank you.
Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So let me give you an example and see if it makes sense to you. So we have a lot of cannery workers from all sorts of countries who don't speak English very well, and they send money back home. Would they use this kiosk to send money to their parents in Mexico? Would that be an example of how a kiosk would be used?
Again, for the record, Heath Hillard, just after Senator Tilton, through the chair, Senator Stevens, that is one very common usage, yes.
Sure, that makes sense. I understand that. I do know many folks that I know use Western Union in Safeway, and they don't pay 20%, you know. So it's the whole thing seems like such a scam and such an abuse of our citizens. Thank you.
Yep. I don't see any other questions. They're figuring out where I am. All right. I would also note we have available online Director Tracy Reno, Division of Banking and Securities, and Dean Fleer, Financial Examiner, Division of Banking and Securities. If there are any questions, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I might actually pose a question to Director Reno and Mr. Fleer. On page 5 of the bill, there is a requirement for a kiosk operator to have an anti-fraud, anti-money laundering policy. I assume that also is going to require compliance with the I forget the name of it, but there's a federal rule about preventing the financing of terrorism. Can you help us with what the division would require in those policies? I assume you're going to want something more than the back of a napkin, no fraud here. So what would you look for a policy that is compliant with this this proposed section?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, this is Tracy Reno, the director of the Division of Banking and Securities. We are the primary regulator for money service businesses regulated under the Alaska Uniform Money Services Act, or AS 0655. And we have oversight over the virtual currency kiosks, and they're considered registered agent locations under the Money Service Business Act. Just a little bit of background, there's currently what we know as of the end of February, 76 active currency kiosks. Virtual currency kiosks throughout the state located in grocery stores and gas stations operated by 7 different money service business companies. Specifically to the fraud and anti-money laundering policy language, all money service businesses are required to be compliant with the Bank Secrecy Act, anti-money laundering procedures, and that includes having a compliance officer who's responsible for the program, having regular periodic audits of their program, conducting training for their employees, and then investigating suspicious activity reports. Any transaction that's deemed suspicious, they have to review it, determine if it is suspicious, report it to the federal government within a certain period of time. There are dollar thresholds. There are requirements for know your customer based on the dollar threshold. So there are some requirements required by the federal government for all of those things. Did that answer your question?
Senator Keel.
So there's a little bit of a disconnect in what I'm hearing about complying with a slew of federal laws and an understanding from advocates that these seem to be engaged in or it seem to be used for a lot of fraud or and in some assertions primarily for fraud. Can you help me with what's it take to comply with those federal laws and does it work?
The chair, Chairman Stevens, this is Tracy Reno at the Division of Banking and Securities. My personal opinion is that these, money, it's a transaction, and I believe that these machines are being used because it's easy and convenient, right? They're in grocery stores and gas stations. And it just happens to be, I think, the flavor of the day, right? So these kiosks are being utilized by scammers because cryptocurrency is on the blockchain. It is, you know, private. You don't have ready access to whoever holds the crypto. It's so when someone takes cash and puts it into a machine, it's sent to a wallet and they don't know who owns that wallet. The money or the crypto is gone. So it's an instantaneous transaction, not something you can go claw back. And so I think that is that's what people like, the scammers like. There are people all over the world, they're trained to do this. They scare people. They make them forget to ask questions or take a minute to breathe. Like, they just are in a panic state and they don't read the warnings. They don't stop to think this doesn't seem right. They don't, they're just in this state of panic, and it's that they're using the kiosk because it's quick and it's gone, and it's really difficult to get that money back.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the banking and securities folks, is it truly inconvenient and harder to go to the bank to do this? I mean, I have to trust my bank. Maybe I shouldn't, but you say that they're using these kiosks because it's easier and it's convenient. Do we make it harder for people to go into the banks and do the same things A Spanish or a Mexican worker working in the cannery sent $100 to their parents in Mexico. Why is that so hard in the bank? And is it hard?
Through the chair, this is Tracy Reno with the Division of Banking and Securities. I believe that people who are using cryptocurrency, they have a phone in their pocket, they have a money transmission app, or they have their cryptocurrency platform on their phone, or they have a computer that they're using it. And I don't know the number of people that are actually going to the bank and getting cash out or getting their paycheck cashed and walking into a grocery store and sending money to the kiosk. I don't know what that percentage is, and that's a great question. But I would think that because it's, you know, cryptocurrency is new, and I won't say new, but it's, you know, it's just something that's, it's not readily available. You have to use a computer or an app to usually send it or to transact with it or invest it. And so I just don't know how many people are actually using the kiosks.
Well, not my question really, but thanks for that attempt.
I don't see any other questions for the folks from banking, but I have a couple of questions. You've talked some about scammers using these kiosks to an event like what happened with Senator Tilton's mother. When I see this, I respond less about the scammers, but more about straight money laundering and drugs and all kinds of illegal activities. And I know the issue of money laundering is a very real deal in the folks that aren't following our laws. And this seems like the biggest share of what's going on is money laundering. Any sense on that, or any ability to tell us what statistics might or might not be going on? I guess if you knew it was being money laundered, then we'd be getting prosecuted, and that's the challenge. But any thoughts on that topic? That's for Ms. Reno or Mr. Fleer, either one.
This is Tracy Reno through the chair. I'm sorry, I didn't realize that question was directed at me. So the question is, what are the money laundering statistics related to cryptocurrency kiosks?
Yes.
I don't have that information.
Your earlier testimony was, Ms. Reno, was that you sense there's some issue of scams going on. Is there some sense there is money laundering going on with these cryptocurrency or with the cryptocurrency kiosks?
Through the chair, Tracy Reno, Division of Banking and Securities. I would assume, and I don't know, I think that's a specific question for law enforcement or matter of fact, maybe FBI or federal agencies who track money laundering, but my guess is that these scammers are, you know, international drug rings or, you know, just criminal groups that are working this because it's working for them, right? They're getting these people to go to kiosks and they're getting them to send the money. So I would direct specific questions related to criminal activity or money laundering to a law enforcement agency.
Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, I would just note that in the bill packet on basis, there is a notice from the United States Department of Treasury's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network that talks a lot about both scams and money laundering by drug cartels using these kiosks. It's a dozen pages, and this is the consortium of the federal law enforcement folks who look into this stuff. So I would say they don't speak specifically to Alaska, of course, but I would say it's definitely happening.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Chairman, and to the Senator. You know, we don't want to make it impossible for folks in my communities that work in the canneries and want to send money home. We want to make it find it easier for them to do that. But I guess my question is, if your bill would get rid of 96% of the business, 96% of the business, why would they even stay in business in Alaska? I mean, would they leave? And we don't want to make it impossible for people to transfer money. But on the other hand, if 96% is fraud and they've got only 4% of the business they had in the past, would they even stay?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, I think that's a good question to ask the kiosk owners who I'm guessing we will have as an invited testimony or will be testifying here before this committee at another hearing. Mr. Hilliard has something to add to that.
Through the chair, against Heath Hilliard, staff to Senator Tilton. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, several of the operators testified in the previous committee that the bill as introduced would cause them to leave the state regardless. And so despite, well, the previous committee decided to lower those percentage, the fee cap percentage and the numbers on daily and monthly transactions, and was asked by one of the members of that committee and said they had previously testified that as is, the bill was still already too strict. So if our goal is to provide some safety mechanisms but keep them, then I think that's going to be a consideration for this committee to discuss about what are might the appropriate transaction limits be, what might the appropriate fee percentages be to A, protect citizens, and B, allow them to still operate.
Thank you.
I don't see anything from anybody else. I will note, as I shared this with the bill sponsor yesterday when we met in advance, in my youth I once watched a trial down near the border, and it was the criminal charge was intentionally evading the currency reporting requirements. This was a trial in federal court, and it was a woman who was believed to be associated with a drug cartel who would cross the border and routinely go to banks in the United States and deposit between $9,500 and $9,900. And it wasn't just one or two deposits. It was in the hundreds of deposits, and there is a transaction currency reporting requirement in federal government that deposits of $10,000 and more have to be reported. And so that the topic about should we have some limits that are reflective of the federal currency reporting requirements, I met with one of the owners of the kiosks who had some interest in having a limit that was high enough so that if somebody was putting that much in that they would need to report that, and they didn't like limits that were below that. No conclusions today, but just in terms of the information or some of the issues that's out there. And I think the general sense for the criminal trial was they were after somebody on the money laundering aspect of drug money, and which probably heightened my reason why I'm more interested in the money laundering side of these machines and less, not to minimize the scammers, but I feel like as a societal matter, the money laundering is a much bigger issue than the scammers. But that's just thoughts, and if you hear me talk about the currency reporting requirements as we discuss this bill, that's the currency reporting requirement that is probably in the mix. But unless Senator Tilton, anything you want to add today?
No, thank you, Chair Klayman, and members of the committee for hearing beginning testimony here today. And I look forward to coming back, and maybe we can have some invited testimony where you can get some of the answers that the questions that you're asking about from law enforcement and those types of folks, as well as the kiosk owners. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, we are going to set Senate Bill 249 aside for further review. We will now adjourn for the day. Our next meeting will be on Monday, March 23rd at 1:30 p.m. We will be hearing, House Bill 101, Crimes Against Minors, Age of Consent to 18, sponsored by Representative Gray. And after that, we'll hear House Bill 93, Residency Requirement, Hunting, Trapping, and Fishing, sponsored by Representative Hemshute. With that, we will stand adjourned. The time is now 2:10 p.m.